Stay tuned for Bob Inyart Live. But first, hi, I'm Pastor Bob Inyart with our Denver Bible Church update. I got a couple comments about the bit we did, what was it, just last night in this update section, about our five senses in heaven. That in heaven, things are going to be, of course, different, but also way more familiar and comfortable than we might think. Because God created us, and he liked the way he did it. He thought it was very good. And so, yeah, we're going to get new bodies to go to heaven because our current ones are not functioning as well as God would like. But will we have, for example, our five senses? And a reading of the book of Revelation, aside from other items in the Bible, show us that we will have our sense of hearing and smell and sight and taste and touch. We will have those senses. And I heard from a couple people that said, hey, that's interesting to think about what in heaven will be familiar. And I thought of reviewing what we've covered in the past about in heaven, about whether or not there will be time in heaven, because so many Christians have heard this notion that there will be no time in heaven. And that, of course, that can't be the case, because then you wouldn't be able to sing a song to God. You'd be stuck on the first syllable. You couldn't get the second syllable out of your mouth after the first, because there would be no after. And people think, when they say there's no time in heaven, in their minds, sometimes they distort it, and they think, well, that means there are no deadlines. That means I don't have to set my alarm for 5:30 in the morning. That's what they think. But what they say glibly, and many Christians actually mean wrongly, is that there's no time in heaven, is that time doesn't exist. And of course, that's not true. You know, and they think that God exists outside of time in an eternal now, so that this present right now, the moment you're listening to this, is not really the present, because for God, everything is the present, which is utterly ridiculous. And it's a huge problem, because then Jesus Christ is suffering on the cross right now for God. And right now he's calling out to the Father, why have you forsaken me? Which he's not. The Bible says explicitly that Jesus Christ did that once and for all, never to endure that again. It's over. And so in the book of Revelation, when Jesus opened the seventh seal, which, by the way, happened after he had opened the sixth seal, there was silence in heaven for about half an hour. That's Revelation chapter 8, verse 1. So there was silence in heaven for what? For eternity? Never again a sound? No. For a short time, there was silence. In fact, earlier, when he opened the fifth seal, the souls of those who had been martyred cried out, saying, how long, O Lord? Notice the time element. How long, O Lord, until you judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth? These are the people who were martyred, killed for their testimony, and they're asking God for vengeance. Why are they doing that? Because they no longer have the phony self-righteousness of popular Christianity, which disclaims any desire for vengeance, as though vengeance were bad. Vengeance is good, and God will do it because he's better at it. But they desire, how long, O Lord, how long? In other words, they're waiting. How long, O Lord, until you judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth? And the tree of life bears 12 different kinds of fruit, each fruit coming ripe every month. And over, we see these things in the book of Revelation and elsewhere, that Christ is waiting until his enemies are made his footstool. Christ, right after he offered his sacrifice, he's in heaven waiting until his enemies are made his footstool. Heaven is going to be real, and I can't wait to get there. Now, stay tuned for Bob Inyart Live.
Service with a wink and a nod.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, America's most popular, self-proclaimed, right-wing, religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number is 1-800-8-ENYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. Let's see. Now, we've got a voicemail message that I want to play for you from one of our listeners who are not too happy with the show. So we'll get to that. And I have a pamphlet here from a group that I generally like the group, and I like much of what they stand for. They're fiercely against communism. They despise communism, and they recognize it for the great wickedness that it is. Also, try to guess which group this is. Also, they're against socialism, which things are good because communism and socialism violate thou shalt not steal, which is something that the government should not violate. And this group is against homosexuality, and it's against abortion, and it's been active for decades. What group is it? What group is it? Well, it's the John Birch Society. And the John Birch Society has a pamphlet that they've probably printed a million copies of. At least that's where I got. I got it from, it's published by the John Birch Society. And I'm looking at the title page here. It's called Republics and Democracies by Robert Welch. And I'm going to give you a quote out of this here pamphlet, which will highlight something that I think is a problem with conservative Christians. It's a problem that's been around a long time, and it's not going away soon. And this show, Bob Enyart Live, exists in part to try to help people cure people of this problem. And it's attributing to the pagan world truths that God revealed to us in the Bible. In the example, a bit later in the show, I'll quote to you out of this pamphlet where it talks about in Athens, 600 BC. So, in fact, 2,600 years ago, that in Athens, a lawgiver established a law, and in his law, he said that the rulers must obey the laws. And they're talking about what a republic is. And a republic is things public, res publica, and the law, and that the law rules. And not only does the law rule, but even the king should obey the law. All right? Even the ruler of the land, whoever he is, should obey the law. Okay, fine. Right. But they say, isn't that obvious? Well, it should be obvious. But Robert Welch in this pamphlet, all the way deep into it on page 3, he says that when Solon of Athens published this concept, that this was a new idea. And it can correctly be described as a Western idea. And I don't like it all that much because it's a biblical idea. But we'll get to that in a little bit. Now, first, let's see. What I'd like to do is to play for you a call. You're going to have to listen carefully because the woman isn't speaking all that loudly. She's pretty clear, relatively lucid. But she leaves a minute or two message. And you'll get the idea. She's not a big fan of the show, and she decided to call. So let's see, we got to put that on hold, right? Did you put it on hold over here? All right. Let me pick this up. And let's see here. Nope, we're not getting it. Let me try it again. Now bring up the volume. Bring up the volume on the caller.
End of message.
There we go.
To call the... Hi, I listen to your show a lot, and tonight I was listening, and you guys have become in my eyes, a disgrace to the Christian community by labeling people like, what did you call the guy? Because moron was the last word.
All right, now hold on a second here. When she said, you guys, please turn the volume down, and we'll bring the volume back up in a moment. When she said, you guys, that gives me an idea that she's probably listening to a show that Doug McBurney was on. So let's bring it back up. Let's see.
Hi, I listen to your show a lot, and tonight I was listening, and you guys have become, in my eyes, a disgrace to the Christian community by labeling people like, what did you call the guy? Moron was the last word. I really am sorry that you have stooped to the level of labeling people. And I know the Bible says, judge not, lest you be judged. And your comments about the pothead, I never saw a pothead shoot anybody. And, I don't know. Your opinions are way off base. And that's my opinion. God bless you. You can get some feeling of what God's will is through this phone call. Thank you. Bye.
All right. Now, I don't know if she was smoking anything exactly at the time when she made the call or not. But she never saw a pothead shoot anybody. That's because they can't hit what they're aiming for, ma'am, because they're potheads. And it's funny how Christians, the most popular verse of the Christian community, there was a time when it was John 3:16. Now, personally, I like John 3:18. That verse gets short shrift. It's one of the neglected Bible verses. But John 3:16 is a great Bible verse, and there was a good time, when that was the Christian community's number one verse. But then Hillary Clinton changed all that, because Hillary's favorite Bible verse, in fact, the devil's favorite Bible verse, is now become the Christian community's favorite Bible verse, which is, judge not. And Jesus, in Matthew 7, said, judge not, you hypocrite. If you read the whole paragraph, he says, you hypocrite. Don't judge. First stop doing what you're doing, it's the same sin as the other person, and then judge your neighbor. We'll be right back.
At Bob Inyart Live and KGov.com, you'll find literature, audio, and video products that are a must for the library of any Christian interested in studying the truth of the Bible. You'll find essential material like the plot manuscript, an overview of the whole Bible that will clear up doctrinal issues. Then there's The Tree, a fun audio journey back to the Garden of Eden, where you'll learn about this most famous tree and its impact on humanity. Check out the Mount Moriah video. This video gives evidence for the resurrection, combining biblical and secular resources. It's a great witnessing tool. And don't forget the death penalty video. Learn that Jesus advocated the death penalty and learn how God put the death penalty at the heart of the gospel. You can directly help Bob's outreach by subscribing to Best of Bob, Bob's Best 8 Shows of the Month, or build a Bible study library by ordering the monthly Bible albums. There's a lot more, so give us a call at 1-800-8-INYARD. That's 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278 or KGOV.com.
This is Bob Inyart here with a live commercial break. Now, is it really live or is it just taped? Well, this is January 6th, right? At 7:15 p.m. Mountain Time. This year, see if you can guess what it is by the sound of it. What is that? Doesn't that sound like a debate with an atheist? It is. It's 170-page debate This is our second best-selling unpublished manuscript. It's a debate with the resident atheist at Theology Online. His screen name is Zaketh, and Zaketh is a lifestyle atheist, and he spends a lot of time attempting to refute the belief in God, and especially Christianity. And so I had the opportunity this summer to debate him, a 10-round moderated debate in front of a live internet audience, so to speak. And boy, was it a lot of fun. And you could read for yourself. I think what this can do is hone your witnessing skills. How do you talk to other people and give them reasons to believe in God? And by the end of the debate, by the 10th round, there's not only overwhelming evidence that God exists, but that Christianity is true and that Jesus Christ is our creator and the savior of those who trust him. So check it out. Does God exist? Bob Enyart versus Zaketh. Call us 800-8-ENYART or go online at kgov.com. We're back. Bob Enyart Live. We're going to the phones, 1-800-836-9278. First, we'll go to Colorado and then South Carolina. In Aurora, John, speak your mind.
Hi, Bob. How you doing?
Doing well, sir.
I was wondering if you ever thought about having James Warner on.
James Warner. Tell me who he is. Remind me.
He just, he's been on a lot of different radio stations, you know, and stuff like that. He's a believer and talks about end time stuff and things like that.
All right. So,
New World Order. And
yeah. Does he say this is the end times?
Kind of.
Any idea? Does he give us any specific idea of how close we are?
Probably, but I haven't heard him in a couple of years. One of my friends just told me to.
Oh, to recommend him?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we appreciate that. I'm always curious about how close people think we are to the end times.
Uh-huh.
And that's always an interesting question because the end times, we're closer to them now than we were 2,000 years ago.
That's true.
We're 2,000 years closer. So it's a all right. I wrote his name down, John. I appreciate that very much.
I have one more question.
Yes, sir.
It's kind of a, you know, I don't know if you can give this like a, what you think, just kind of basically about unconditional eternal security, once saved, always saved.
Yeah, well, that is, of course, a very central question for those who study the Bible, and it's an issue that's divided millions of Christians denominationally.
Uh-huh.
And it's one that we cover in great detail in a manuscript that we've been offering for years now called The Plot.
Okay.
The overview of the Bible. And if we were to discuss it in passing on the air, you know, there's so many Christians with so many strong feelings that it would take, you know, weeks of shows to begin to address it.
Right.
So here's the offer I've made to people for years now. If they have a specific doctrinal question like that, what I like to do is say, if you want to, not that you need to do this, but if you want to read The Plot, and then after you've read it, we'll schedule time for a phone call where I'll, you know, I like to talk with you and talk through the whatever issue it is you're interested in. And
okay.
If it's somebody in Denver, usually we meet at a Starbucks or something.
Okay.
But so, John, that's certainly an offer to you. You know,
yep.
But anyway, so we tend to avoid some of the more divisive doctrinal issues on the air.
Okay.
But not always, but generally.
Okay.
All right, John?
Thanks, Bob.
God bless you. Appreciate the call. Now let's go to South Carolina, Greenwood, South Carolina. Mike, speak your mind.
Hey, Bob. How are you doing tonight?
Doing well, sir.
I called at your station or at your church, I'm not sure which it is, earlier today, and I was wondering, would you have by chance happened to have listened to today's episode of Focus on the Family?
Well, I've heard James Dobson for many years, but I didn't hear the show today. Tell us what it was about.
Well, I was actually hoping that you would have listened to it. I called up and recommended that you listen to it.
Well, I appreciate that.
They were talking about the subject of the sanctity of human life.
Right.
And just to tell you a little bit about myself, I'm about as pro-life as you can get, both morally and legally.
Okay.
When it comes to abortion, I don't grant any exceptions for abortion.
Right.
And when it comes to, say, if I became a terminal patient one day when I was when I'm old, or if I was sick or had an accident or something, I believe that the doctor's job is to keep me alive as long as possible, to save and to preserve life. And they, on the show, were discussing this issue. They talked about, pardon me if I'm hammering a little bit, I'm a little bit nervous being on the radio.
You're doing great. Go ahead.
But anyway, they were mentioning a fella who was a terminal patient. He was going to die anyway, and he was hooked up to a ventilation machine. And they were discussing whether or not it's okay to go ahead and remove him from the ventilation machine,
right,
seeing how he's going to die anyway. It's just a matter of, is he going to die, you know, like right now or in a few weeks from now?
Right.
Just a matter of time.
Right.
That he's a terminal patient. Give me your take on that.
Okay. Well, let me tell you what the fundamental principle is that the pro-life community has used for decades in fighting this battle. Mm-hmm. And then maybe you can tell me how that scenario fits into this principle. And the principle is this, that it's not immoral to die or to let people die who are dying. That's not immoral, but it is immoral to withhold food and water from people. Food, water, shelter, clothing. You provide the basic necessities of life, but if someone is dying, it's okay to die. It is okay to die. So let's say your heart, you've had six heart attacks and your heart is given out, you're 70 years old and you're dying.
Right.
And they could rush you to the emergency room and artificially pump blood through your body and mm-hmm. keep your body alive, but you're basically dead.
Right.
Are we obligated to do everything humanly possible to keep a body alive and a heart pumping? And the answer to that is no, we're not. It's okay to die. But on the other hand, what liberals do is they say, well, if we want someone to die, we're going to hasten it by starving them to death. Now, that's murder.
Right.
That's wrong. But if someone can't, if their body cannot function without equipment, then you make a decision. Can I afford this equipment? Do I want to do this? What is the reason? But but it is okay to let people die who can't live.
All right. Well,
that's the
take
principle.
Terry Schiavo, or however you pronounce that name.
Yeah, Schiavo.
No, she had the feeding tube connected to her.
Yeah,
to,
that's
withdraw food from her, she would starve to death and have a terrible death.
Yeah, that's killing her. It's starving her to death. She wasn't dying.
Well, she depends upon the food supply from that tube to keep her alive.
Right. In the Bible,
if somebody is depending on a breathing apparatus to keep them alive, I'm failing to see what the difference is between keeping somebody alive by feeding tube and keeping them alive by breathing apparatus. Either way.
All right. Well, how about their heart? Would you grant me also their heart? What if their heart can no longer pump, and so you're pumping blood through their body?
Well,
by your
people have artificial hearts, although they've typically not lasted very long, or pacemakers and stuff like that. You go to the doctor, and they do what they can for you to keep you alive long as possible.
All right. Now, okay, let's talk through that. So that technically, as we progress, we should be able to figure out ways to keep a body, the heart, the blood circulating through the body, maybe for years or decades, or maybe even a century or more after the person has stopped functioning. And to do that, let's say for someone in my family, we've got a large family, and say one person in the family is 70 years old and has now died, they're virtually dying, their heart is stopping, but we could, with technology, keep their blood pumping. Mm-hmm. It'll be very expensive, very difficult, but we could keep it going.
Right.
And maybe it costs $500 a day.
Uh-huh.
And so in a matter of time, we could use all the resources for our family to keep the blood pumping in someone for whom death is okay. It's okay to die. It's okay. Death is not the enemy that has to be avoided at all costs. It's not. What has to be avoided at all costs is murder, killing someone. That's to be avoided at all costs. So when someone is dying, do you withhold food and water to starve them to death to get it over more quickly because you don't like to suffer?
If I was a doctor,
yeah,
I would feel that if I had withheld water or food from somebody, I would be killing that person.
You're
I'd
right.
be taking
You're
into
right.
my own hands
right.
a right that belongs only to God. If I withheld them from the available apparatus to save their lives, whether it be a ventilation machine or some other kind of machine,
right?
If I deprive them of that, I still feel as if I am denying.
Well, Mike, here's your problem.
Letting them die,
okay,
and that's not my right to do that.
All right. So eventually, if technology continues and your principle of morality is correct, eventually we'll have tens of thousands of people lying in beds with blood being pumped through their bodies, then hundreds of thousands, then millions, and maybe in a century or two, we'll have 2.5 billion people lying in beds with blood being pumped through their bodies.
That's absolutely right.
That's
we
ridiculous.
We already have.
That's absurd, Mike.
We already have people who are in comas,
yeah,
and who are brain dead. Their bodies are functioning, but there's no personality
in
them because they're brain dead.
Mike, if they're not dying, our obligation in the Bible, God tells us we have an obligation to feed those who cannot feed themselves. We have that obligation, but we don't have the obligation to spend inordinate amounts of money, go through extraordinary effort to keep people who are dying alive. We don't have that obligation. We have the obligation to care for one another and provide food and water. So if you think the world would be a better place with 1.5 billion people lying in beds with machines pumping blood through their body, I think you come to that through an incorrect moral principle.
But then again, if you keep that person alive long enough, who knows? They may come up with a cure for their condition and they'd be able to survive.
That's right, but it doesn't matter because it's okay to die.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
We are both pro-life.
Yes.
Neither one of us endorse abortion.
No.
And I have this gut feeling, I can't avoid it, that if we as Christians put our stamp of approval upon withholding from somebody that needs a breathing apparatus to remain alive, even though they are terminally dying and they are going to die anyway in just a matter of time, that the pro-choice crowd is going to come along and use the same, they're going to say, well, this is a quality of life argument,
right,
and they're going to use quality of life as an argument for the justification of abortion.
Right, and so the difference, so if we had some fuzzy...
Yeah, I understand that being hooked up to an apparatus that enables you to breathe, that's not what I would call quality of life. But I don't see where it is our job to determine when somebody
it isn't.
Dies.
It's not our job. It's not our job to judge is their quality of life sufficient. That's not our job. But it's also not our job to go to extraordinary lengths to stop people from dying. It's you haven't addressed this. I've said it 4 or 5 times.
Okay.
It's okay to die. It's okay to die.
Yes, I believe it's okay to die.
Right. So if someone is dying, their body is finished functioning, their heart is gone, it's okay to let them die. It might be sad.
If I have the means to be able to keep them alive,
well, if you
as
want
far as
to,
I am concerned,
yeah, right,
in the sight of God, I have the responsibility to do what I can to keep that person alive with the hopes that maybe God might heal them. At least this way I know that when I stand before God on Judgment Day, I will not stand before him with blood on my hands.
Well, that's...
God will know that I have such reverence for the sanctity of human life. Therefore, there's no blood on my hands.
Well, that's a very dramatic way of saying, really, I'm right, without directly responding to my arguments. the biblical injunction is to feed those who cannot feed themselves. That's what we're to do. What liberals do is they feed alcoholics and drug addicts, and then they refuse to feed those who can't feed themselves. That's what liberals
do. I couldn't argue with you on that.
Right.
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Yeah, but so our responsibility is to feed those who cannot feed themselves, but not, this will be it. If you would like to make a final comment, go ahead. But it's not to go to extraordinary lengths to mortgage my home, to use all the resources I would use for my kids to keep one body, a blood pumping in it, in a bed in a hospital ward somewhere. That's not a responsibility that God has given to us.
Well, you just do what you're able to do. You do what you can. I mean, that's just the way that I believe. I realize that death is real. It happens, and we can't always control when it happens.
All right.
And our hospitals are indeed very expensive. But that's just the way that it goes.
Yeah.
That's all I can say about that.
All right, Mike, I appreciate your call.
Hey, good talking to you, Bob.
God bless you.
Have a good night.
I really do appreciate it. There's among pro-lifers, obviously, there's some disagreements about particulars, and that's one. But it seems to me that the principle is clear and that it is okay to die. And we don't have to go to extraordinary lengths to replace organs in our body with machinery. But it is okay to die, even if you're an unbeliever. If you're an unbeliever, millions of unbelievers die every year. It's a real tragedy, but they die. They've had a life to decide to side with God or to be his enemy, and then they die. And then they meet their maker, and the judge of all the earth shall do rightly. Let's go to the phones in Michigan, 1-800-836-9278, in St. Joseph, Michigan. Carl, speak your mind.
Hi, Bob. How are you doing?
Doing well, sir. How are you?
This is Carl here in Michigan.
All right.
I was listening to the Friday show.
Yes.
I think that was with Chris.
With Chris, that's right. Well, was that Friday
or
Monday?
Maybe that was yesterday.
Yeah, that was yesterday's show. Chris from Florida.
Oh, okay. Anyway, you mentioned pots and pans, how you guys hated them.
Yeah.
So when I was in the Army, I had pots and pans.
Yeah.
All the time, because I had KP all the time.
Oh, brother.
Now,
that's bad.
People don't know that you actually do know me, but I tend to say things sometimes to get me into trouble.
All right, Carl from St. Joseph. Sure, go ahead, Carl.
And that'll get you KP all the time.
Okay, right.
Now, here's the problem, just as a side note.
Yeah.
You know, that never deterred me from saying the things that I said. KP's just another job.
Right. So you took it. You took it, and you kept getting in trouble.
Yeah, right. And the pots and pans was just another job.
Right.
So it was never a deterrent, just as a side note there.
Okay.
Also, driving in Michigan.
Yeah.
It used to be really good. When I first learned how to drive, we got to drive in, part of our family was in Detroit. We used to drive in Detroit. The only place in the United States where there wasn't a lot of gridlock. They still know how to drive on the highway there.
Uh-huh.
If you weren't doing 75, you better be in the right lane. Because someone's going to run you over.
So they know how to drive quickly there.
Yeah.
Good for them.
I'll agree with the left turn thing. I just don't get that. But
we were talking on the show about how in some swath of Michigan, they've outlawed making left-hand turns off of major roadways. So you have to go through the intersection that you want to turn left at and go a few hundred yards past, make a U-turn, and then cross two or three lanes of traffic in a short distance to make a right-hand turn.
Yeah.
It's just bizarre.
Yeah, and I think that's the Dutch Reformed influence.
Yeah, which is heavily legalistic. They're utter control freaks. I grew up in a town that was so thoroughly Dutch Reformed in New Jersey, Prospect Park, New Jersey, and it was against the law to work on Sunday. Now, in the Bible, God said to Israel, you can't work on Saturday. Well, they said you couldn't even paint a bedroom in your home on Sunday. If you did and a neighbor saw you, they'd call the police.
You're kidding.
No, you could not You couldn't paint inside your house on a Sunday. You couldn't do any work. And one weekend, my brother David wanted to go fishing.
Uh-huh.
And my father had said to him, my brother Dave to this day is a big fisherman. He makes homemade wooden nets and everything. Anyway, my father said, you can't go fishing until you cut the grass. And my brother forgot about cutting the grass. Oh, it was in the summer. He was going to go Monday morning first thing. So Sunday night, about 8 o'clock at night, he takes a power mower. My parents weren't home, and he starts cutting the grass. And the police were there. The neighbors were out. It was a big fiasco.
Oh, man.
Yeah, those are the blue laws that this country's famous for.
Yeah, I remember in confirmation class, that was a question. Should we work on Sunday?
Oh.
And the answer that the pastor gave was...
Only at bingo.
Well...
Sorry.
He said it's not against the law, but he would just try and, you know, avoid working on a Sunday.
All right.
That was it. That was the answer we got.
All right. So confirmation of what was it?
Lutheran.
Lutheran. Oh,
yeah.
I was thinking Catholic. Okay. Because I was confirmed in the Catholic Church.
Yeah, I was confirmed Lutheran.
Mm-hmm.
And it was good enough for the Lutherans, and it was good enough for the Orthodox. I got married in an Orthodox church.
A Russian Orthodox.
Russian Orthodox, yeah. And the priest there, they say that in the first place we went to refused. They said I didn't have my confirmation sheet with me. But
wow.
But it was okay if I was confirmed as a Lutheran. Right. At least confirmed in a Christian church of some kind, I guess.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And the first place wouldn't accept us, and the second place took our word for it, and then we could make arrangements for a marriage there.
So what country was this?
That was Uzbekistan.
Uzbekistan.
Yep.
That's pretty neat. How does a kid from Michigan end up getting married in Uzbekistan?
Well, the wonders of the internet.
All right. And how long have you guys been married, and do you have kids?
Yes.
Of course, I know answers to these questions,
yep.
But go ahead.
5 years, and we've got, Daniel and Caroline and Dimitri, and we have, my wife is pregnant, and it might be twins.
Whoa.
Midwife thinks, we might have twins, we'll confirm it.
Wow.
It's not confirmed yet, but we just might have twins, and so we have a growing family here in Michigan.
Now, Carl, so many of our friends use midwives. Did I hear you say have a midwife?
Well, it's not that we use a midwife. It's actually a doctor, but it's just that she's not always doing the appointments.
Okay.
She has other midwives working under her.
Oh, wow.
And officially, though, we go to a particular doctor.
Okay, yeah. And we have friends here who have midwives, and they deliver their babies in their homes.
Yeah.
While they're baking cookies. it's supermom.
Yeah.
It's the age of supermom.
I thought, you know, that might save on some costs, but I really didn't see the big point to it.
Hospitals
are built for a reason.
There are people who love it, and, you know, they have great experiences.
Like the nurse told us the last time we were there, it's her favorite place to work because the people there aren't actually sick.
Ah, yeah. In the maternity ward.
Right, exactly.
That's great. Hey, Carl, thank you so much.
Sure.
God bless you.
Yep, God bless you. Bye.
Appreciate that call. All right, 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. And I was into Carl's call, and I forgot about the last break. Oh, well, that's all right. We'll survive that. If you're listening on the radio, you can get the part of the call you missed on the internet at kgov.com. That's kgov.com. All right, so here is this pamphlet, this brochure from the John Birch Society, Republics and Democracies. And they're pointing out that democracies are bad and that republics are good. And more on that in a moment. But on page 3, Robert Welch writes that the idea of that the ruler has to obey the laws was a new concept and one that started in Athens in 600 BC. And I'm a little, I don't like that because The John Birch Society is has many, many, many Christian members. And I think of late they've got a huge Mormon influence of late. But many, many Christian members and leaders. And they should know, and Robert Welch should have known, that in the Bible, God said to Moses that when he was talking about the leader of the nation and a king, that you shall surely set a king over you whom the Lord your God chooses. And God gave him certain rules that he has to obey. And he said that he has to take this law, the Bible, the Mosaic law, and make a copy of it and read that copy of it, and he has to obey it. Also, it shall be when the king sits on the throne of his kingdom that he shall write for himself a copy of this law in a book from the one before you, and it shall be with him, and he shall read it all the days of his life that he may learn to fear the Lord his God and be careful to observe all the words of this law and these statutes. Deuteronomy chapter 17, right, verses 18 through 19. So what's with that? Moses lived how many years before Solon of Athens? This guy in Athens, he lived at 600 B.C. Moses was doing his thing about 900 years earlier. And so God says through Moses in Deuteronomy 17 that the king must obey the law and the statutes. And here is a pamphlet that's influenced undoubtedly millions of Christians, because Christians who don't know anything about the John Birch Society have heard this about a republic and the notion of the government and even the leader being subject to the law, that notion began in Greece, in Athens. Let me read to you here from page 2 of this. Let's see. These citizens of Athens chose an already distinguished fellow citizen named Solon to resolve the problem for both their present and future of government. They saw that Solon was given full power over every aspect of government and of economic life in Athens. What a nightmare. He's given full power of economic life. And Solon, applying himself to the specific job, time, and circumstances, and perhaps without any surmise that he might be laboring for lands and centuries other than his own, proceeded to establish in the laws of Solon what amounted to the first written regulations whereby men ever proposed to govern themselves. All right, and this was in Athens in 594 B.C., And then Robert Welch, in this brochure on republics and democracies, says that this concept, that the rulers obey the laws, this concept was new and can be described as Western. How about biblical? What is this the sound of? What does that sound like to you? Sound like Gandalf at Bilbo's door? No, it sounds like a debate. 170-page, moderated, 10-round debate. Does God exist? Bob Enyart versus Zakif. Now, at Theology Online on the web, the best Christian website out there, if you haven't visited it yet, you need to. But at theologyonline.com, they have every so often these battle royales. They've had a handful over the last couple years. And this is the seventh one, and so far the last one. Battle Royale 7, Does God Exist? Bob Enyart versus Zakif. We've had so many people read this. Now, we sell these printed. And it's an unpublished manuscript. It comes in a nice little package here. For $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And we've had so many people tell us the most wonderful comments, like when they start to read it, they can't stop, they can't put it down. They bought it to read on a plane, and they read it on their vacation until they finished it. They read it, and then they call back, and they order three more copies to send to their friends and relatives scattered around the country, because it's such a tool to help people think through the issue of, does God exist? What are the reasons to believe that God exists? And it is so much fun, because Zacchaeus is doing his best. He's been debating Christianity and the belief in God for many years. And he says he was once a Christian minister and a Christian counselor. And he's an atheist now. And so he does his best to shoot down reasons to believe in God. And so you see the drama in the debate, and it's fun. You'll want to read it. NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. All right, so the John Birch Society has probably published, what, a million of these brochures? I'm just guessing. They do things in big numbers, that group, over many years. This was written 43 years ago. And Robert Welch, telling people about republics and democracies, says that really the hero is Solon of Athens, who was so brilliant, he didn't realize he was laboring for lands and centuries other than his own. That's very poetic. And in 594 BC, Athens gave to the world, and eventually the Roman Empire picked up on the laws of Solon, this notion that the rulers obey the law. That a well-governed state is when the rulers obey the law. And this concept that there were laws which even kings and dictators must observe was not only new, but it can be described as Western. So there, a pagan Greek is the one who gets credit in the history of the world for the notion of government that the leader should obey the law. But the problem is, Solon lived about 900 years after Moses wrote the first five books of the Bible, and God spoke with him on Mount Sinai. What a great video that is, huh? Mountain of Fire, search for the true Mount Sinai. That is a good video. I tell you, you got to see that video. But anyway, so God speaks to Moses on Mount Sinai, and while they are in the wilderness, and Moses writes Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. And in Deuteronomy chapter 17, God lays out the laws for the king. That he said, Deuteronomy 17, 15, you shall surely set a king over you, whom the Lord your God chooses. You know, Jesus Christ is the King of Kings. And that wasn't an afterthought. That was God's plan from the beginning, that Christ would inherit the throne in Jerusalem. And 1,000 years before Christ's birth, exactly as far as we can tell historically, exactly 1,000 years before Christ's birth, David established his throne at Jerusalem. And I don't think that's a coincidence. So in 1004 BC, that's when God helped David to establish the throne in Jerusalem. And so God had a plan that Israel would have a kingdom and they'd have a king. That was God's plan. Now, when they demanded a king one generation before David, that made God angry, because God had a plan for them to have a king, and it was going to be in God's time. But they were demanding a king now, and God said, you want a king? You want a king? All right, I'll give you a king. Here's Saul. You like him? See how he looks? He looks great. There's your king. And it was a disaster for 40 years. And so God knew that they would want a king, and God had planned to give them a king and to establish the Messiah's throne in Jerusalem 1,000 years before Christ's first coming, which is why there's the biblical symmetry in the book of Revelation which speaks of a thousand-year kingdom after the Messiah's second coming. Right, you get that? The biblical symmetry there? 1,000 years before his first coming, the throne was established in Jerusalem. And for 1,000 years after his second coming, he will be seated in the throne at Jerusalem, reigning. So that's the biblical symmetry centered around Christ. Okay. Now, oh, and there's more too, like Jesus began his public ministry when he was 30 years old. And that's when David began to reign when he was 30 years old. And David reigned in Hebron for 7 years and then in Jerusalem for 33 years. And Christ lived for 33 years and then he was to go to heaven for 7 years during a tribulation and then return for a 1,000-year kingdom. It's a perfect symmetry. You could read all about it in the plot manuscript, or you could hear about it in our Bible studies like the Last Days album or the two Revelation albums we have. But at any rate, so Moses, 900 years before Solon of Athens writes, Moses was quoting God, saying that the king, when he sits on the throne of his kingdom, that he shall write for himself a copy of this law in a book. A copy of what law? The Mosaic law. God gave the law to Moses that the people must obey. All right, well, how about Moses? Did he have to obey the law? Of course he did. The prophets, the judges, of course they did. Joshua, of course they had to obey the law. So God said that it shall be when, first he had said a couple verses later, you shall surely set a king over you whom the Lord your God chooses. And back then, God was choosing specifically who would be the king. And God told Samuel the prophet, all right, see that guy? He's going to be the king. Anoint him. So, and Samuel cast lots. First they got Saul, then they got David. All right, so then God says, when he sits on the throne of his kingdom, the king of Israel, that he shall write for himself a copy of this law, the Mosaic law, in a book from the one before the priests. That is, the king is to take the book, the books of Moses, and write it with his own hand, write his own copy, and it shall be with him. In other words, he was to take the Bible and make his own copy of the Bible handwritten in his own hand. And it shall be with him, and he shall read it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God and be careful. Now, this is the key point to contrast with the John Birch Society's pamphlet, Republics and Democracies. And you're going to give credit to someone for the governing principle that the rulers must obey the laws. And Robert Welch said that this concept was new and it was Western. Whereas God said here through Moses in Deuteronomy that the king must be careful to observe all the words of this law and these statutes. That the king must obey the statutes and the law. So why would he credit, and this is the issue that Bob in Your Live is one of the things that we're determined to continue to expose, just like judge not is the Christian cliche, the mantra that's wrong. Jesus commands us to judge. This is another one, that God in the Bible sets out principles of governance, and we Christians, not only do we not know that, but we attribute truth and good law to pagans, to a lunatic British system of law, common law, that was so utterly unworkable and godless. And we don't know that God in the Bible addressed principles of governance. And so we credit pagans and Europeans instead of God. We don't even know what God said about the matter. Why is that? It's because our seminaries don't teach the Bible, basically. You know, you take a couple Bible classes, but you come out of seminary and you know about as much of the Bible as a Sunday school kid who read a few books during the year. So anyway, we shouldn't we shouldn't be telling people, and the John Birch Society should issue a correction and say, after 43 years, they should say, this was wrong. To correct this, it wasn't the pagan Greeks who came up with the concept that the rulers must obey the laws. God stated that through Moses in the Bible almost a millennium earlier. So just a minor correction there. All right, what else? Oh, and the very title of this brochure, Republics and Democracies. And the John Birch Society's point is that democracies are evil, which they are. But they say that the republics are good, which they're not. Republics are not good. Republics are bad also as a form of government. You know, democracies and republics are kissing cousins. Let me illustrate how they work. Let's say the people want to kill babies, kill unborn children, and they have a democracy or they have a republic. What do? In a democracy, the people want to kill babies. They want to steal their neighbor's money. They want to fornicate, right? They want to commit adultery, the masses. So in a democracy, the people vote directly to legalize adultery, stealing, and murder. And then they could fornicate and steal their neighbor's money for their own benefits, and they could steal their neighbor's wives or husbands and kill their unborn children. That's a democracy. In a republic, if the masses want to take money from their neighbors, commit adultery, and kill their unborn children, then what they have to do is vote for Hillary Clinton. And she'll pass the laws, and the other representatives in a representative republic, and they'll pass the laws and to make it legal to commit adultery and to steal money from your neighbor for your own benefits and to kill your unborn child. So they're kissing cousins. A representative republic and a democracy, the representative republic is just a little bit slower than a democracy. A democracy skips the step of Hillary Clinton. You don't need Hillary with a democracy. You just directly do the evil thing you want to do. You don't have to get the permission of your elected representatives. So if democracy and republics are kissing cousins, effectively a representative republic and a democracy are basically the same form of government with different techniques, a somewhat different system, but the same family. So then what form of government is better? That's a secret. I'm not going to tell you. You could read the Bible and try to figure it out. I don't know. What form of government does God authorize in the Bible? I don't know. I couldn't. Who could know? Who could know? It's a big book. We can't ever know. We can't ever know. It's sad that generally Christians in Sunday school at church, they don't know about principles of law and justice and government as they appear in the Bible. They have no idea. Because so many Christians, if you quote a Bible verse and they say, that's the Old Testament. That's the Old Testament, with a sneer on their face, as though God was messed up in the Old Testament and he got fixed in the New. And it's really a defense mechanism, because what they're saying is the Old Testament is a big book and I don't have time to read it, let alone study it, so I'd rather not allow you to quote from the Old Testament with a straight face. You have to put down the Old Testament before you quote from it. That's a typical Christian attitude toward the Word of God. So anyway, here at Bob and Yurt Live, we'll do our best to set some of the cliches straight and to try to make as few errors as we can. But hey, looking forward to tomorrow night's show. Until then, this is Bob and Yurt reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.